Radio Prague News. The Czech government has announced measures to cope with the impact of the global financial crisis on the Czech economy. Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg, whose country holds the EU presidency, said it would be up to each member state to decide whether or not to accept prisoners from Guantanamo. And 10 police officers are standing trial in one of the biggest ever corruption cases in the Czech police force. The Czech government has announced measures to cope with the impact of the global financial crisis on the Czech economy. Speaking after a late-night session with members of the National Economic Council, a group of leading economic experts who are to advise the cabinet in crisis management, Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek said the government's crisis plan would be aimed at creating new job opportunities, as well as boosting investment in research, education and infrastructure. The finance minister said the plan would include both legislative and executive measures. Revised figures foresee a growth of only 1.4% at the most in 2009, down from the 5% predicted earlier. In connection with the crisis, the Czech Interior Ministry has drafted a plan to help send foreigners who have lost their jobs back to their home country. The ministry says it is willing to cover their travel expenses and give them an additional €500 for a voluntary return, since it fears that if left to fend for themselves, 15% would be sucked into the underworld and 80% would find work on the black market. The first two have been affected by the crisis are Vietnamese and Mongolian workers. The ministry's proposal reckons with a departure of about 2,000 foreign workers and, if approved by the government, would require 55 million crowns of state funds. Chairing a meeting of EU foreign ministers on Monday, the Czech Foreign Minister Karel Schwarzenberg said it would be up to each member state to decide whether or not it would help the Obama administration by taking in prisoners from Guantanamo prison. Although the EU has welcomed President Barack Obama's decision to close the prison within a year, EU members are divided on whether they would be ready to accept former inmates. The Netherlands and Austria have said they are not ready to do so, citing tricky legal issues, while the German government is split on the issue. The Czech foreign minister said Prague would deal with the matter if and when asked. It was asked by the US administration. 10 police officers are standing trial in one of the biggest ever corruption cases involving the Czech police force. The traffic officers in question made money on the side by pocketing fines and not writing out receipts or by demanding bigger sums for serious transgressions. The suspects allegedly not only covered for each other but demanded more money from drivers on the argument that their colleagues needed to be paid off as well. The affair came to light after a driver complained to the officer's superior who had their police cars bugged. If found guilty, the suspects could each face up to 5 years in prison. The police are investigating the death of a woman whose 9-year-old son was sexually abused, tortured and killed by a Slovak paedophile in May of last year. His body was found 4 weeks later. The boy's mother had reportedly been seeing a psychiatrist, but family and friends said she had been unable to cope with the tragedy. She was found dead in her flat on Sunday by her brother, who came to check up on her. There was a slight wound on her head, but otherwise no signs of violence. The police are waiting for the results of an autopsy. And finally, a look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be partly cloudy to overcast, with snow showers in the lower altitudes and day temperatures between 2 and minus 2 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, the government unveils measures to help the country through the current economic crisis. New Human Rights and Minorities Minister Michal Kocáb promises to shut down the pig farm at the site of the former Leti concentration camp. Can he succeed where others failed? And the classic work of contemporary American theatre Glengarry Glen Ross goes on stage in Prague. That's all in today's programme. Stay tuned. The Czech government has been rethinking its finances for 2009 and is ready to almost double its budget deficit. With growth forecasts slashed from 5 to 1%, the cabinet has been seeking the advice of some of the country's top financial experts to stimulate the economy. After the first meeting of this advisory board, called NERV in Czech, on Sunday, the government presented its plan in a somewhat somber atmosphere. Rosie Johnston reports.
Výdajovými prioritami v současné situaci jsou investice do vědy.
Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek presents the results of a marathon six-hour meeting of the country's top 10 economists and businessmen on Sunday. Members of the advisory board chewed over some 250 ideas to stimulate the Czech economy, which looks like it will grow by far less than the 5% predicted at the end of last year. At the press briefing after the meeting, both Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek and Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek seriously downscaled their ambitions, saying their new calculations were based upon a growth rate of 1% and that there was a second plan in the possible event of a recession. In light of the downturn, Mr. Kalousek said, this year's budget deficit would grow from 38 to 71 billion crowns, but he stated these extra funds would not, under any circumstance, be used to bail out firms and banks in an American or British style. Martin Kupka, the chief analyst at ČSOB Bank, says that the move makes sense.
Mr. Kalousek is aware of the fact that there is a risk in an economy like the Czech one, that if you simply inject money and give them to consumers, for instance, you can induce an increase in import demand. So, in other words, you won't stimulate that much the Czech economy, but rather foreign producers. I think it has a logic. On the other hand, I think that there are some measures that have been part of the package that can help to improve the situation of those people that would be hit by the negative impacts of the current problems.
Okay, so instead of this aforementioned sort of firm or bank bailout, Mr. Kalousek and the other members of NERV seem to be suggesting things like stimulating local public transport networks or pouring money into infrastructure, education and so forth and so on. Do you think that this can work to revive the economy?
I think that the package is not quite homogeneous in what I would say is the time schedule of the measures, how long it can take before the measures start to work. For instance, I think that support for education is a must in the Czech economy. It has been discussed since long time and it's fine. But I'm afraid that really it's not something that can be implemented from one day to other.
NERV suggests higher government spending on education and research, cutting firms' social security costs when they employ new graduates, and contracting out the upkeep of the country's infrastructure to more private enterprises as means of reviving the economy. The package will have to be approved by Parliament before it comes into effect. With the opposition Social Democrats holding very different views about how to jumpstart the Czech economy, the proposals could be in for a rough ride.
And thanks to Rosie Johnston for that report. For years, numerous Czech governments have promised but failed to close down an infamous pig farm in Leti, South Bohemia, built in the 1970s at the site of a former concentration camp. More than 1,000 Romanis were interned there during World War II, and more than 300 died. But until now, all efforts to remove the farm and erect a proper memorial in its place have come up short. Now the newly appointed Minister for Human Rights and Ethnic Minorities, Michal Kocab, has expressed his own commitments to see the project through, but many have questioned whether he can succeed where so many others have failed. Jan Wellinger has more.
A proper memorial in Leti, South Bohemia, to those who died there during the war is something that human rights activists have pursued for years, but to little effect. The pig farm built in Leti in the 1970s has remained until now. The new Minister for Ethnic Minorities, Michal Kocab, a man who helped orchestrate the withdrawal of Russian troops from Czechoslovakia after 1989, has pledged to do more. But is his promise realistic? Although welcoming the minister's words, many representatives of Roma groups remain skeptical. Earlier I spoke to Markus Pape of the Committee for the Redress of the Romani Holocaust.
I hope, of course, that the statement is meant seriously and that there will be some action following. Our experiences so far are, unfortunately, that ministers promised to do something to solve this problem that is evident and known since 10 years, but none of the ministers of this resort never achieved any significant results.
More than 1,000 Romanis were interned at the Leti camp during World War II. 327 died there from disease or abuse, while more than 500 were transported to the death camp in Auschwitz. Every year, a ceremony is held near the site in their memory, but until now, no government has been able to remove the offending farm. The cost of buying up the property, some have estimated, would be between 500 million to 1 billion crowns. But Markus Pape argues that ultimately the problem lies not with the costs, but with a lack of understanding and deeper political will.
In case the prisoners of the camp would be of Czech ethnic origin, there would never have been built a pig farm on this area. And in case somehow there would be a pig farm, then it would have been moved away a long time ago. The government should understand that the German government is responsible and obliged to finance a dignified memorial site at the place, but there is no other government in the whole world than only the Czech one who is obliged to pay for the moving of the pig farm.
Michal Kocáb will have less than 2 years before the next general election to put forward a viable action plan and deliver on his promise. That's not a huge amount of time, some observers argue, for him to succeed.
Jan Wellinger reporting there on the newly appointed minister Michal Kocáb's pledge to shut down the pig farm at Leti. On January the 29th, the Prague Playhouse, a Prague-based theatre company that specialises in English-language productions, is set to debut a brief run of the David Mamet play Glengarry Glen Ross. To find out more, Dominic Yoon caught up with the Playhouse's artistic director, Brian Kasp, and he began by asking him to tell us a little bit more about the Prague Playhouse.
The Prague Playhouse was started in 2003. We started with a production of short plays by American authors called An American Evening, and we've been doing kind of shorter plays up until last year, and then we started to do a full season of longer plays. All of the plays that we do are by people that are writing in English.
And what was your motivation for this? Is there an English language audience in Prague to watch these kind of plays?
There's a few different kinds of audiences. One is the expat audience, the people that aren't Czech speakers that maybe don't have the opportunity to go and see things in English. But what we're finding is, because there was the backpacking crowd and the kind of the adventurer crowd, and now the expats have changed much more to like the business crowd. And we're finding that the Czechs that come, there's a lot more Czechs that speak English fluently enough to come to a play in English and not feel intimidated or lost.
And are you sourcing your actors from the expat community here as well?
Yeah, for right now we are. There's a small community of actors that we're mostly using. I know that there are other theaters, like in Germany, where they do bring in some talent from outside, but we're not at that stage, although it could happen. But right now we're using local actors.
And the play that you're about to begin showing to the public is Glengarry Glen Ross, the David Mamet play, is that right?
Yeah, Glengarry Glen Ross. It was a play, it was written in the 80s, and in the early 90s it was made into a film with just some iconic actors and really great performances, and that's where I first came into contact with it, and since then I've always been looking for an opportunity to do it, and everything just kind of came together with the cast and the energy of our group, and it was the right moment, and so we decided to do it, and it's really exciting to watch it come together.
Brian Kasp of the Prague Playhouse, speaking there to Dominic Yoon. And Glengarry Glen Ross is playing at Divadlo Inspiratsa in Prague from January the 29th to February the 7th. Now, time for a change of gear. Ian Willoughby joins us for all the latest sports news.
Goal! Goal! Goal!
First up today, it's skiing. And after a slow start to the season and some health problems along the way, the Czech cross-country skier Lukáš Bauer seems to have hit top form at exactly the right time. Bauer notched up his first World Cup win of the season in the 15-kilometer classic at Estonia's Otepää on Saturday, becoming the first skier to come first there 2 years in a row. That success comes less than 4 weeks before the World Championships on Bauer's favourite course in the North Bohemian resort of Liberec, which he's hoping will be the high point of his season.
I'm completely satisfied after my win, both in terms of my performance and our preparations. Everything worked out today. I wouldn't say I wasn't satisfied with how my season had gone up to now. We've been preparing for a gradual improvement in my performance as the World Championships draw near.
And let's hope it all works out for the Czech when the Nordic World Ski Championships get underway in Liberec on February the 18th. Tomáš Berdych, seeded 20th, was the last Czech singles player in tennis's Australian Open when he faced former world number one Roger Federer in the fourth round. And things were looking good for a while, with Berdych taking the first two sets 6-4, 7-6. However, Federer, hoping to equal Pete Sampras's record for Grand Slam titles, fought back to win the next three sets 6-4, 6-4, 6-2 and secure a dramatic victory. Another Tomáš left wondering about what might have been was Tomáš Werner, who took gold at last year's European Figure Skating Championships. After day one in Helsinki this year, the Czech was second overall and hopeful of again making the podium. However, on Friday's final day, Werner messed up some basic moves in his free skating performance and ended up coming sixth. After a similar experience at last year's World Championships, his coach told reporters the skater needed to work more on his mental approach than his technique. Finally, the Czech football star Tomáš Rosický is making progress in his bid to return to full fitness, over a year after he last played for Arsenal. The midfielder, who's undergone two operations to deal with a complicated hamstring problem, said on his own website that he began training on a pitch again last week. It now appears the 28-year-old could be ready for competitive action in March. That's all the sport for today.
You're listening to Radio Prague, where it's time for another chance to hear Dominic Yoon's interview with Bill Cohn, Professor of Media and Ethics at the University of New York in Prague.
My guest today is Bill Cohn, a New York-born lawyer, constitutional law professor, and teacher. Bill has lived in the Czech Republic for a number of years, dividing his time between teaching media and ethics at the University of New York in Prague, writing for publications such as the Prague Post, and working as a legal consultant.
You're a media and ethics professor and a constitutional law scholar, is that right? What exactly does that mean?
I'm trained as a lawyer. I worked as a lawyer in San Francisco and California for a decade, and I came here, returned here. I was first in the Czech Republic, which was then Czechoslovakia, in 1990, and planted the seeds for my return, which happened in 2002. So I've been here about 6 years, writing, advising, and teaching about law and law-related matters. And it's a labor of love. We get into a lot of interesting issues at the university where I teach, and the students are fabulous.
So tell me what it's like when you compare, for example, Czech students with American students. What are your experiences working with young Czechs?
Well, I ask them if they have any relevant experience, and they never want to say anything. And I say, the difference between you guys is that American students think they're expert in everything. If their mothers breastfed them, they think it makes them an expert in early childhood nutrition. Whereas these Czech and Slovak and other European students actually have a great deal of relevant experience, but they tend to downplay it significantly. They don't think it's worth anything. So to the extent that they can amplify their relevant experience, I think it behooves them in this age when people need to market themselves, frankly, because they do have fabulous language skills, fabulous educational and work experience, and it's it's great to get them out of their shell and make them realize their potential and work with them.
And I guess possibly part of this shell that you mentioned may be related to the communist past in this country, whereby certainly media and even the very concept of ethics was not taken that seriously by the former regime and had that effect on the generation. So when you're kind of teaching young Czechs, is that something that you're aware of, that there's a sort of new perceptions coming along?
Yeah, the critical thinking class, what we focus on is asking the right questions, questioning assumptions, questioning arguments that are made. And definitely there's a tendency, given the history of education in Czechoslovakia and the East, for students to be accustomed to rote learning. That is, their instructors throw at them information, which they swallow and then spit back. And what we try to do is break that down. I should mention that the university where I teach is the University of New York in Prague too. And I've been there for 6 years. And we, you know, have a lot of things that we do in order to help our students realize their potential. So the challenge is in terms of breaking through the tendency to just accept and not question the information and analysis that they're given, and also in terms of helping them to be active participants in their own learning. The greatest challenge I have is I ask students to find a related topic to the subject matter to investigate on their own. And they drag their feet because they want me to give them something. And I'm like, no, you need to do some research and think about what we've done here and find something that you're genuinely interested in. And that's like pulling teeth sometime. But it's an essential part of empowering these young kids to realize their potential, that is, to think independently.
And what do you think, from a slightly wider perspective, the state of media and ethics and some of these other issues that you deal with are overall in the Czech Republic?
Well, when it comes to law and ethics, obviously the problem here is corruption. There's a passivity, there's a resignation to the fact that this is just the way it is and we'll never be able to change it. But I see amongst the leaders in our student body a burning desire to change that. So I do have hope that the kids are going to lead to a better day. I see their excitement and optimism in a lot of areas. And one of the great problems they're going to need to tackle is corruption. Another great problem they're going to need to tackle is climate change, global warming. They're aware of these issues, and we try to integrate it into their learning because they recognize that they need to do better than their parents' generation did.
Working with these young Czechs, what have their perceptions of Americans been, and have they been somewhat perhaps colored, prejudiced by the current state, shall we say, of America under the Bush administration and the kind of, you know, the image problem that America has certainly faced in the last few years?
Certainly, but enough of them have spent time in the States. You know, these kids are very mobile. They're part of the, you know, globalization. They've been exchange students over there. And I should mention, in terms of, you know, the international element, our university has students from around 70 different countries. The largest constituency is Czechs, followed by Slovaks, followed by likely Russians and students from the states that formerly constituted Yugoslavia, Croatia, Serbia, Macedonia. I've had students all the way from A to Z, Afghanistan to Zimbabwe in my class. We have lots of American students, lots of Canadian students, so it's very international. I mention that in the sense that the students have a lot of international experience, having lived and worked in other places, and I think they recognize that the people of a country aren't always to be closely associated with their government, that the people can be good, and people are good generally, even though the government may do things that are seen as bad and not in the interest of, you know, people who are affected by their actions. So that's part of their empowerment and critical analysis that they're developing, and their life experience helps them to get there.
Can you describe what it's like for a foreigner, an English speaker, to live in Prague and the various sort of small international English-speaking community here, you know, trying to make a difference, letting your voices be heard?
It's nice to be able to have outlets like the Prague Post, as well I write for various online publications, particularly because I write about the things I teach about. So it lets me share my writing with my students and integrate, you know, theory and practice. My feeling about teaching is, if I'm not actively engaged and interested in the topics I'm teaching about, why should the students be interested in it? So my writing helps to keep me honest in terms of raising questions and thinking about cutting edge issues, including missile defense and the radar base here.
The radar base is obviously a big issue here. How do you personally view the way it's been played out?
Associate Justice Louis Brandeis of the U.S. Supreme Court said that sunlight is the best disinfectant, meaning that when things are exposed to the light of day in public scrutiny, there's a more honest process and better outcomes. And in this sense, obviously, everything was held closely under wraps, and the public wasn't really involved in having a say in this until it was essentially a done deal. So that's my sense about the process, that it was too much of a closed process.
Final question. You're a New Yorker. You're from New York.
Yeah.
You grew up there, and now you live in Prague. What are your kind of contrasts and views of the pros and cons of living in these the two cities?
I love them each in their own way. I miss the cuisine of New York. I miss the things that I'm culturally familiar with. But as the French say, vive la différence. It's the fact that we can be here and experience things that are different that makes us appreciate both where we come from and the fact that other places are different. Czechs hold their cards close to the vest. They don't make eye contact with you. They don't smile at you. But if you can break through that and get to know them, they're really just a bunch of big, soft teddy bears underneath it.
Bill Cohen, thank you very much for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Dominic Yoon with that edition of One on One, when that program was first broadcast in June of last year. And if you joined us halfway through that, don't forget you can hear it again on our website, www.radio.cz. But for now, from myself, Rob Cameron, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.